It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 158 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray. And today we're going to be giving you our first impressions of Wave 3, as well as some of our thoughts on the surprise additions to the hyperspace format.
Yeah, we're going to do a split episode today, since we got kind of two big things happening in X-Wing right now. Obviously, we just saw the launch of Wave 3, introducing the Separatist Alliance and the Galactic Republic as two new factions, maybe the final factions in X-Wing, who knows at this point, but it'll bring our faction count up to 7, and that adds with it a whole slew of 6 new fighters that we can discuss today, kind of talk about our experiences with them early on and what we expect from them in the future.
Right. Of course, we've been talking about these two new factions for quite a while, the Republic and the Separatists, but now we've actually seen them on the table. And so, of course, that always changes your opinions of things.
And we also had the really big surprise drop of a bunch of new hyperspace additions, new ships available in hyperspace, which I think neither of us were expecting. A lot of people weren't expecting. So we're going to break those down really quickly, look at the highlights of what we think is important here and kind of the implications for the upcoming hyperspace trials.
Yeah, so let's get right to it.
All right, so before we dive into the main content for today, we want to give a couple shout-outs to some stores that ran some really great hyperspace trials these past couple weekends.
Right, this past weekend I was at the hyperspace trial in Cheyenne, Wyoming, hosted by Olympus Games, and it was run beautifully, hosted by Ken Johnson, kept everything running smoothly. Except for him repairing me with a bunch of my squad mates, everything was great.
I did want to give a shout out to Ernest Pasillas, as well as the team over at Dreamers Vault Games in Minneapolis. They ran the first hyperspace trial in Minnesota a few weeks ago. It was a really fun event. Ernest did a really great job. We did a one-day event, so there was a lot of pressure to keep the timetable, and Ernest did a really fantastic job of making sure everyone was getting their match results in promptly and getting those rounds repaired very quickly. So, it was a super fun event. I got 9th place by 1 MOV, which, you know, that's a little bit of a feel-bad moment. Just missing out on that top 8 there, but the overall event was so good that I can't complain.
Ooh, I also have to give a shout-out to the Back to Dials, Asa and Adam, who ran a fantastic stream at the hyperspace trial I was at. I did get to play on one of the stream games, so hopefully I can post a YouTube link to that soon. It's a very good match.
Yeah, and a shout out to the Echo Base guys, Kevin Lines and Jake Ream. They were videoing matches there, so I think they're going to start throwing those up with commentary on their page over at Echo Base. Be sure to check those out. I know I got videoed for the first game losing to Will Hegwood, so that would be a fun one. Spoiler alert if they actually do comment on that one. But maybe we'll see that one crop up in the next couple weeks. I don't know, but definitely check those guys out. All right, so let's actually get into this here. Wave 3, Galactic Republic and Separatist Alliance. Right off the bat, Carson, before we get into any specifics here, what's like your overall impression now that these ships are officially released?
I think my overall impression is I am overwhelmed with the number of squads that I want to put on the table. There's just so many things I want to try out. Just so many new, you know, list archetypes that I've, you know, never even seen anything quite like it before, or some things that seem similar to old play styles that I've enjoyed but with quite new twists.
Yeah, maybe the biggest thing for me is I really actually had a lot of fun. I've flown some Republic stuff now and I've had a really fun time with a lot of these Jedi pilots. I'm not sure where they land competitively yet, but the ships are really entertaining to fly. The thing that surprised me, though, was how interesting the Separatist Alliance looks now. Like, I was not very interested in this faction at all. But now that I've flown against a lot of these ships, I'm starting to get a lot more interested because they do have some cool tricks going on.
Absolutely. But let's start with the Republic. And I think, you know, if you're looking at competitive ships, the ARC 170 definitely cost it aggressively. You get a lot of value for just a pretty small amount of points.
Yeah, right now, if I was playing in a competitive match against a Republic list, I think the ARC 170 would be the ship I'm most intimidated by. I mean, this thing's got 9 hit points, 6 hull, 3 shields, and 3 attack dice natively, as well as a split firing arc, so you can shoot out 3 attack dice out the front or 2 dice out the rear on a medium base. So these things pretty solid, and they're costed really aggressively. I think the lowest cost one is starting around just 42 points. So for that many hit points and attack dice, like, these things are a bonkers good value.
Oh, absolutely. You know, these are really the ships that are throwing the heavy attacks in the Republic. You know, the Jedi Starfighters and the Torrents, you know, they're throwing 2 attack dice. And if you have an expensive Ace Starfighter, you know, maybe they're rolling 3, but they're not shooting as frequently. These ARC 170s have, you know, high attack dice pools, and with the dual arcs, they get to attack turn after turn after turn.
And the ARC pilot I was most excited for was Wolf, the Initiative 4 ARC pilot. And this one's pretty cool. Got that sweet pilot ability that while you perform a primary forward ARC attack, you may spend 1 charge to reroll 1 attack die. And then while you perform a primary rear ARC attack, you may recover 1 charge to roll 1 additional attack die. And this ability is like pretty cool right off the bat. Like, you get that offensive modification even just out the front ARC, which is nice to have even if you just have a focus token. I think it's a little limited in that it's just an initiative 4, but I think the split arcs and the ability to take cards like Veteran Tail Gunner to shoot out front and rear in 1 round, you could do some pretty cool tricks with this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Wolf's real exciting. The Delta 7s, the Aether Sprites, those are kind of a really mixed bag. You know, when you look at all the pilot abilities, there's so many great options. And of course, a lot of, you know, high level force users. But it really is difficult to find the right build for these guys. You really, you know, with both the configurations and, you know, a slew of pilot options, it's really like a build your own ace, which I think there's a lot of ways to get that wrong.
Well, I think the first thing I'd say about the other sprites is that I really actually enjoy their ship ability, fine-tune controls, where after you fully execute a maneuver, you can spend a force charge to perform a boost or barrel roll action. This makes these ships really fun to fly, because since every pilot obviously has access to some amount of force, even on the low end with the generic Jedi Knight with just 1 force, these things are super maneuverable, and being able to get a reposition action and then still follow that up with either a target lock or more often a focus token, these things are like super, super fun to fly. That's really all I can say about them at this point. I do think they have some issues, but I think that built-in pilot ability makes them pretty appealing to me. I think their issues lie in kind of like determining which of those configurations you're going to take and what this ship's role really is.
Right. I mean, the mobility is definitely appealing. And what's nice is, you know, if you compare that to like the auto thruster ship ability, you know, you get an action and a reposition action. But for the Aether Sprites, they're not getting stressed when they get 2 actions a turn. Yes, they are losing a force charge instead, so that's a very real cost. But when looking at mobility, you know, now they have their whole dial opened up. They don't need to do those blue maneuvers every turn, which makes, you know, their dial look better than an Interceptor or TIE Silencer. And it really allows them to, you know, access those red maneuvers. And the Aether Sprite does have a lot of really cool red maneuvers.
Yeah, access to both 2 S-loops as well as 4 and 5 K turns gives them some really great repositioning options whenever they do need to flip around. I think my biggest problem with the Delta 7s without their Delta 7B configuration is that they're really squishy at just 3 hull and 1 shield. These ships, even though with, you know, what, force abilities and 3 agility dice, like, I'm just so afraid that if I just get a volume of attack dice on them, they're just not going to hold up over time.
Oh, absolutely not. They'll go down.
Yeah, and I feel like you're already investing so many points. I think maybe one of my bigger fears is that these ships, since they all have force abilities, they've been costed pretty high, maybe a little too high for what you actually get without the B7 configuration. And by the time you add the Delta 7B configuration, you're also adding another, you know, 15, 18 points on top of that.
Yeah, the Delta 7B is real expensive, and then they're going to be pretty squishy if you just take the calibrated laser targeting, although that is much more affordable. So pretty interesting choices there. The part that I always find frustrating in list building, though, is when you get to those force powers, because there's really not too many great options.
Yeah, I think the Force Powers slot, we've talked about this before on the show, is kind of become one of the more disappointing slots. There's some pretty good Force Powers up there. They're few and far between. I think we saw Hate, which released pretty recently, is a really solid Force Power on a lot of pilots. But when you're looking at the new ones like Brilliant Evasion, which is just a little too expensive for a pretty minimal effect of spending
Tim, I think it's just a lot too expensive. That's just
well, the effect's pretty small. You get to spend one force charge to change two focus results into evade results, which is pretty situational, especially coming in at, I think it's at 6 points right now.
Yeah, I'd pay about heroic points for that.
Yeah, one or zero seems like the right cost to put that one at. Especially since those force charges are really valuable. You don't want to overspend them too quickly. And then I look at cards like Predictive Shot, which, I mean, it's got a lot of text on there, which, you know, I hate. But the amount of effort you have to put in to very little payoff just does not seem like it's worth investing points in.
Right. I'm still holding out that Supernatural Mace is going to be a thing.
Yeah, that's one of the areas where since he's an initiative four, I think Supernatural's only like 16 points. So that actually seems like a reasonable choice, and that pairs pretty well with his pilot ability, right?
Yeah, so you can use the Supernatural reflexes, get some repositioning, and then dial up a red maneuver. And then with Mace's pilot ability, because he did a red maneuver, you get that force back, which seems pretty solid.
You can also throw R4P17 on there, which is a 5-point astromech with two non-recurring charges. After you fully execute a red maneuver, you may spend one charge to perform an action, even while stressed.
Right, so I think there's a lot of fun shenanigans you can do there. You can also do some pretty crazy shenanigans with Anakin's pilot and afterburners, you know, using that boost, then coming into range one to clear that stress after doing a red maneuver.
Yeah, there's some pretty cool stuff on here. So, I mean, the jury's still out to me on Delta 7s. The squishier version without the Delta 7B configuration, it really depends on how useful those Jedi pilot abilities can be for your other ships, I think. On their own, those ships aren't too intimidating. And then when you throw the 7B configuration on there, they get a lot more offensive output. They feel a lot more like ace ships, but I still think they might be a little too expensive, especially compared to ships like the T-70 X-Wing.
All right, now definitely looking at the cheap end, we have the V-19 Torrance. And this is a ship that I was surprised that I was enjoying. Usually this is not the type of ship that's for me. But, you know, these are very efficiently costed, particularly when we're looking at the generic options. You know, 25 points for the Initiative 2 pilots. And, you know, then you can throw on Dedicated because they have the talent option. You know, or any other talent. I think that's pretty cool. You know, both the Torrance and the ARC-170s, even their lowest initiative pilots have access to the talent slot. So that's a pretty cool thing for the Republic.
Yeah, and I haven't been able to play with the V-19 yet, but I do like it filling in that kind of really cheap point cost because, you know, the Delta Other Sprites or even the ARC-170s can get pretty expensive once you start loading them out. So having access to that kind of filler support ship is a really nice option for the Republic.
Right, for just 28 points with Dedicated, you get a pretty good little ship that can protect your Jedis or more expensive ARCs.
All right, so now we're going to get on to the Separatist Alliance, which has been, it's been pretty surprising to me. There's some cool stuff in here that I was not really paying attention to before the release.
Right, and I think, you know, I knew they had some pretty cool control gimmicks, but seeing it on the table, you know, definitely can make things seem a lot more impressive.
Yeah, and I think we should start off with the Belbalab 22. So this was the ship that was probably lowest on my radar of the three that came out in the faction. But having played against this one now, I think this one's a pretty big threat because it's got a pretty solid stat line to start. 3 attack dice, 2 agility, 3 hull, 2 shields. So kind of a slightly inverted TIE advance there with a more emphasis on attack than defense. But you've got some really cool loadout options because you can throw the Soulless One title on there, adding 2 extra hull and giving it a reroll whenever you're attacked by a ship outside your firing arc, which is super cool. And those rerolls add up over time. And it's also got a pretty solid dial and basically the same action bar as the Fang Fighter, where you can link a reposition action into a focus.
Right. This one I wasn't super excited about just because, you know, especially, you know, kind of across the Separatist factions, it looks like they just have low initiative. But, you know, the Soulless One title, you know, if you get arc dodge and they can shoot you, well, you still get some modification. And, you know, we've seen the initiative drop quite a bit, particularly in hyperspace. So pilots like General Grievous, who want to be arc dodging, but are only at initiative 4, well, now they have quite a good chance of doing that.
Yeah, and I'm actually really digging Grievous's pilot ability. It's kind of outmaneuver-esque, where basically instead of your opponent rolling one less attack die, you get some rerolls, which is super cool. He is still just at initiative 4, but like you're saying, with the lowering initiatives in hyperspace, that's pretty good. That's good enough to initiative kill some of those lower ships, like some of those, you know, initiative 3 A-wings or something. And you can load out a pretty good Grievous for not a lot of points. I think if you go Grievous with the Solus One title, just comes in at like 57 points, and that's a 7-hit-point ship with some, you know, decent offensive output. So that's not something to scoff at.
Oh, absolutely not. All right, but let's move on to the Sith Infiltrator, because that's the ship I want to talk about.
Okay. Why are you so excited about the Sith Infiltrator?
Well, this is probably the closest I've seen to the original, you know, dual aggressors from first edition. We have you can take two large base ships and they just work so well in unison together. So taking two of these infiltrators and that's your whole list, I think that's really exciting.
Well, the infiltrators are a pretty good value because you get 3 attack dice and then 10 hit points for not a whole lot of points. I think Maul comes in just around 60 points, right?
Right. Yeah, they also come with, of course, those 3 force charges on Maul and Dooku. And then you have plenty of points left over for quite a bit of upgrades. You know, you can take proton torpedoes on both of them. And the Scimitar title is really cheap at just like 4 points, you know, getting you that red cloaking action plus the white jam action, plus the ability to jam when you decloak. Really solid. The only issue is it is unique, so you can only put on one of them. I think Dooku's the better target here because with his pilot ability, you know, when you get targeted by an attack, you can spend a force to, after the attack, remove one of your tokens. So you can remove that cloak token, which lets you, you know, use the cloak for defense, and then you get to attack an initiative 3 after you take off that cloaking token.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool combo. I wasn't exactly sure how to use that Scimitar title effectively because it seemed like a lot of effort to get it going. But now that I see that synergy, that seems pretty solid.
Right. And then after you attack, you can also spend a force to perform an action. So if you have the initiative advantage, well, then you can attack and then spend a force charge to cloak up. So 3 agility on a 10 hit point ship with some force charges is pretty good. And then you use hate as your force power so that when you take damage, then you can, you know, recharge your big force pool pretty well. The tricky part is how do you protect Maul, the other infiltrator? You know, he's not going to be able to cloak, so he's just got 1 agility. But I've seen people use Chancellor Palpatine, and that's pretty interesting. That's what's made me pretty excited about these dual Sith infiltrators.
Yeah, because you need a way then to deter people from actually shooting at the infiltrator with kind of the weaker defense there, because if they take, you know, one of your ships off the board pretty quickly, even if you have a really good other ship, you'll get overwhelmed by a volume of fire.
Right. And so the stress deterrent, kind of old school rebel captive that you get from Chancellor Palpatine, I think that works meaningfully enough. And, you know, with torpedoes, some bombs, maybe some drones, you know, allowing you to jam from far range, there's a lot of threat these ships can put out. It's not all defense.
All right, so that's going to bring us to our last ship here from the new wave, the Vulture class droid fighter. These little guys have just 2 attack dice, 2 agility dice, and 3 hull, but they do come with that cool networked calculations ship ability, which lets them basically share calculate tokens with other nearby calculating ships.
Right, and these Vultures, you know, they have 3 hit points and 2 agility, so, you know, they're even squishier than a TIE fighter. But they do come in, you know, at just 20 points for the base Vulture.
Yeah, and I honestly never thought we'd see anything ships get cheaper than the TIE fighter here. I've clearly been proven wrong. I mean, like, effective ships, not like that autopilot drone, but that's the one exception. But yeah, they are squishy. But I think one thing that kind of surprised me seeing them on the table now is there is a lot of resilience to be had with networked calculations. Basically having access to, if you're flying, you know, four of these together and they all calculate, having access to four different points of modification, even on just two dice, like that adds up pretty quickly. And these things might take a couple shots before they go down.
Yeah, if you have to shoot these things twice, that's really annoying.
And if they're at range and you happen to not kill them even after a couple shots, that's even more annoying. The one that I'm actually really afraid of, not that I think it'll be fun to play against, but the one I really just don't want to have to play against at a tournament is eight of the lower initiative one Trade Federation drones, which can take that energy shell charges missile and munitions failsafe, and they each come in at just 25 points. So they can get, you know, a three attack dice shot that they can regain if they don't roll any good hits on it, and you can have eight of those in a list at 25 points each. That does not seem fun to play against.
Yeah, we'll certainly see. All right, so not only did we get two new factions added to hyperspace, but with the release of Wave 3, we also got a bunch of new ships added to the original three factions, Rebels, Imperials, Scum.
And also one upgrade card for the First Order.
Of course. Can't forget about Biohexa Cryptic Codes.
But let's talk about Rebels first, because we always like to talk about Rebels. Rebels are doing pretty good in hyperspace now, so the changes here aren't huge for them. At least I don't think they are. We did see the B-Wing, the A-Wing, and the rest of the U-Wing pilots that were not yet available all be added to the hyperspace format.
Right. I mean, the B-Wing not really filling any new niche, you know, kind of doing the same thing that T-65s or a loaded out Y-Wing's doing. Yes, they can now also take tractor beam or jamming beam, but I don't think that's too impactful.
Yeah, there's nothing about them that screams, since they're so, since they're so similar in cost to T-65 still, there's not a lot of reason to take a B-Wing, and even their cool, you know, named pilots with cool pilot abilities come in at such a low initiative compared to all the great options you have for T-65s, there's really not a reason to take B-Wing still.
I do like the A-Wing as an addition for the Rebels, just because it is so cheap and, you know, a high mobile platform. Well, that's very different than what the Rebels are doing right now.
Yeah, but I think you're a little biased after having played with RZ2 A-Wings over on the Resistance side. Like, I think A-Wings still don't hold up. I think the RZ2s compensate for a lot of the faults that the RZ1 A-Wings have by having that rear firing arc. I don't think the classic A-Wing is that effective, even if it is cheap right now.
Yeah, I'm still holding out for when we get that Tycho pilot who's hopefully an I-5.
And we got U-Wings with new pilots, which this was a weird split to me, but I understood it because technically the first second edition release was the Saw's Renegades expansion, which came with the repaint and new pilot cards for the U-Wing and the X-Wing in first edition. It also came with all the second edition material for those cards. So in hyperspace, so far we'll only had access to like the Saw Gerrera stuff, Magva Yaro, Benthic 2 Tubes, all that cool stuff. Now we've added all these other early Rebel pilots like Bodhi Rook and Cassian Andor. And I don't think they're adding a lot. U-Wings are actually okay even in this format, but I don't think these pilots in particular add anything. I think the coolest pilots were the Saw's Renegades ones.
Well, with Cassian, you know, clearing stress plus Leia reducing difficulties of maneuvers, you know, your ship should never have a stress token.
That seems like a lot of, well, not in Leia though. She's not a huge investment, but the other one seems like a big investment for a support ability. That's not that great, honestly.
Right.
I don't know. I'm not too excited about that.
Moving on to the Imperial faction, though, we did have some big additions. The TIE Interceptor, huge addition to the Empire, adding, you know, just one name pilot, that I-6 Scintier Fell, changes quite a bit.
Yeah, so this is interesting. So right now, hyperspace is pretty well dominated by Resistance lists and Rebel lists. We see some representation from other factions, though, but those seem to be like the dominant in the general field and also in a lot of the, or at least the cuts I've seen. It is nice to have this option, though, for the Imperials now. They've been struggling a little bit for a true ace. They did have Darth Vader over in the TIE Advanced, But his output and his cost was a little prohibitive, whereas Sunder Fell's, you know, relatively inexpensive, and if flown properly, can really complement an Imperial list.
Absolutely. You know, the Alpha Interceptors, those I-1 generics, also pretty solid. They'll be competing with the generic TIE Strikers as, you know, pretty solid filler ship with 3 attack dice. It's kind of based off whether you like the auto thrusters or the ailerons ship abilities.
But I mean, you know, if you can throw a Sunder Fell out there with just the Predator upgrade card for 54 points, that's a really good addition to an Imperial list. Like, that ship on its own can close out a game if flown well. And you can basically fit anything else you want in that Imperial list for the remaining, you know, 150 or so points you've got.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these changes were in effect for the hyperspace trial I played at this past weekend, and there were a lot of Sunder Fells around.
And to complement your Sunder Fell, you kind of got a ship on the opposite end of the spectrum added, the TIE Bomber, the classic one.
Right. The TIE Bomber, you know, of course, you know, was a major threat of the hyperspace format. You know, it's since gone up quite a few points, and munitions have also gone up. So now I think it's, you know, a pretty fair option. But the Empire wasn't really doing anything with munitions before. So adding the bomber, you know, does really diversify their faction.
Well, and to complement that further, I think they added barrage rockets as a generic upgrade card to hyperspace, which is a great way to load out the TIE Bomber if you don't want to go with like a classic proton torpedo or cluster missiles or something like that. Having that, you know, not as strong attack, but more recursive attack where you can shoot that up to 5 times with the charges, that's a pretty solid value on a pretty cheap platform.
Right. And of course, you also get, you know, pilots like Captain Jonas, which, you know, just enable complete munition strategies. So that's exciting as well.
And then over on the scum side, we have a ship edition I think we're both moderately excited about now that we have Guri and the Star Viper available in hyperspace.
Oh, absolutely. You know, unless you were English and flying fangs, you know, across the pond, scum wasn't doing too well in hyperspace. But hopefully the Star Viper will really shake that up.
And with the addition of the Star Viper, we also had the Virago title added, which seems kind of like a no-brainer there. That's going to be a fun option. I will expect to see some Guri start to pop up since I-5 is still really strong in hyperspace. That's just going to further emphasize that for the game. We also saw the Z-95 added, which I feel pretty cold about. I don't really care about having the Z-95 in hyperspace. I don't think it brings in anything meaningful.
Right. I mean, you already have the Mining Guild TIE and, you know, around the same price points, you also have the Escape Craft, which both of them, I think, are stronger options. You know, there's not really any super powerful missile that makes the Z-95 stand out above those. Mm-hmm. You know, if we do eventually get one, perhaps in Wave 4, that will make the Z-95 more exciting. But as is, I think the only real meaningful addition to hyperspace is the Star Viper. And I think Guri is very exciting.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you're going to go Z-95, like, I don't think even swarm play is good for Z-95s because you just have so many better options than other factions. And like we mentioned, we did have one upgrade card added to the First Order, the Bio-Hexacrypt Codes, which people were terrified of at the potential of this being in hyperspace when First Order first came out.
Right. I mean, you know, if you have a lock on a ship, you can spend that to either coordinate out of range or jam out of range. So pretty powerful, you know, especially if you're coordinating to Kylo when he's on the opposite end of the board. Or you take a lock on a ship with your Upsilon and, you know, they move out of your arc. But then at a key turn, you can spend that lock to jam them. That seems pretty awesome as well.
And I do actually, I don't think this will be like game breaking, but I do expect to see this upgrade appear since Lieutenant Tavson is pretty popular in the Upsilon class shuttle. And since this card is just a tech slot and 1 point, I can see people finding a way to squeeze it in their list because, I mean, honestly, even just an early target lock to get a good action, coordinate action later out of range, that could be worth the 1 point on its own. All right, so there you have it. Our look at the hyperspace changes, our first impressions of Wave 3. Obviously, we're going to get a lot more games in with these ships in the future here, so we'll have a lot more to say as we see how we experience these ships and how they affect the upcoming hyperspace trials.
Yeah, so X-Wing aside, do you have a bit of a personal announcement? You know, Tim passed this along to anyone in Minnesota. I did get engaged recently.
Woo!
to the lovely Dr. Amanda Cormier.
That is very exciting. When you first told me you had something to tell me, I thought you were going to say either you were leaving the podcast or you got a job and you were moving back to Minnesota. But I think this is actually a more exciting option than either of those two.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have to wait a little while in Minnesota. Sorry about that.
Well, obviously, you've gotten a huge congratulations from me, and I'm sure that sentiment is shared with a lot of our listeners. So feel free to throw up a message on our Facebook page or you can track down Carson's personal Facebook page and congratulate him on this. Pretty exciting stuff. Will there be X-Wing at the wedding?
Probably not. You know, we can chat about a bachelor party or something.
I'll bring my chips anyway. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/radiotcx and like our Facebook page. I'm trying to get that number close up to 1,000. So if you guys haven't liked our Facebook page yet, take that time to get us a little bit closer to that big benchmark number.
You can follow the show on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy the show, please go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review in the iTunes store there, along with a little written review of why you like the podcast. I'd also like to get that number to 1,000, but we're quite a ways away from that right now. But every number gets us closer there. So if you can take the time, just a couple of minutes there, that's a great way to support the show with a minimal investment.
If you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/radiotcx and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means so much to us.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening to the podcast and supporting the podcast. We really appreciate it. A huge congratulations to Carson and Amanda on getting engaged. That's really exciting. And obviously, we will talk to you guys next week. So have a great week and get some of those Wave 3 ships out on the table.